Hi, Marty Lurie here at KNBR 680 with Rick Williams. And Rick is a scout for the Atlanta Braves. But we're not going to talk about scouting. We're going to talk about a baseball life and baseball in America. And Rick goes back to the 1960s, a little bit around that time with his baseball indoctrination. His father, Dick Williams, who was manager of the Red Sox, a former Brooklyn Dodger, a Kansas City Athletic, a Baltimore Oriole, and eventually became a manager in the minor leagues for the Red Sox and then came up to Fenway Park in the impossible year of 1967. So, his son, Rick Williams, is here, but I want to learn more about life in the world in those days and life on the baseball field, because I always say baseball mirrors the culture of America. So, Rick, nice to have you on the show.
Marty, great to see you again. Thank you very much for having me. It was a special time growing up. I was lucky. My memories take me back to the mid '60s when Dad managed with Toronto and AAA. He was making $10,000 a year. We lived in Arcadia, California, just across the street from Santa Anita Racetrack, and the family couldn't afford to go out. I didn't know it at the time, so Mom sent me out. And Dad and I lived together for two consecutive seasons, every single day, once school ended. And it was quite an education because I learned the facts of life. And there were some players that were more than willing to tell me all about it and show me pictures and everything else. So it was quite a learning curve for me. And I learned some words I shouldn't have and saw some things I probably shouldn't have and grew up real quick. And I was very privileged in the fact that I got to spend all my waking hours involved in baseball, which was, it was a game. I mean, it still is, but it was really a game back then for me.
Rick Williams with us. Rick, talking about 1966. All right, so you're in Toronto, and you got Reggie Smith and probably George Scott and people who are coming up to the Red Sox the next year. But what was the world like? It's just a kid now. Of course, you're just a kid in those days, 10 years old. But you're seeing a lot of the adults, of course, as you describe in baseball. But we had turmoil. We had race riots in those days. The world was changing. We had marijuana. We had all sorts of stuff going on. So what was the baseball world like vis-a-vis the world itself?
Well, that's, I can only tell you, I started thinking in those terms a little bit when Dad was with Oakland.
Okay,
so that would fast forward to the early 70s, and the players were still going to 2-week sessions, I guess, in the military requirements and the reserve, I guess it was called. And I can specifically remember Joe Rudy. First time I came up to see Dad in Oakland, again, it was by myself. I was on spring break, I assume, from high school, and came up, and Joe Rudy was doing his service time. And Dad, as we talked about the other day, Dad lived in the penthouse, in Charlie Finley's penthouse on Lake Merritt in Oakland. And he was driving us to where he was living for that first season. And he says, there's only one other resident on this floor of the penthouse. And I didn't know who it was. And he said it was Huey Newton. And it didn't really register until a little bit afterwards. And Dad described that he had never seen him. But, again, that was a time of turmoil in the United States, which I wasn't very smart about. But Dad filled me in a little bit. And it was just an interesting mix that Finley and Newton would have a share a penthouse suite on Lake Merritt in Oakland at that time. It was a couple of interesting personalities.
1970 was a time of a lot of change and a lot of experimentation, and it was years when I remember it quite well. And the team that you were around and the team that Dad managed had mustaches. They were very outspoken. They fought with each other. And I think it was a little bit of taking on what was going on. The Vietnam War was going on at that point. As you say, the reserve duty Joe Rudy was in at that point. So I think the culture of the A's, if you could talk about that a little bit, give me a little something on that.
Well, they were great guys. I never really saw the actual fights. I knew there were fights. There probably weren't as many as people were led to believe. But yeah, it was different. There were, I remember the leaders on the team. I remember Dave Duncan as a leader of both black and white. I remember Catfish Hunter as a leader as well. And it just was an interesting cult of the personalities that were on the team. I can remember 71 or 72, Tommy Davis coming on a team flight talking about this new group that he liked called Tower of Power in San Francisco. And now I'm just sitting out here in the press box and I'm hearing Tower of Power songs, and it's 2016, 45 years later. So the times they were unusual. Music was big. It was starting to blossom. The players had different interests. Of course, the contraptions that you carried on the plane were huge compared to the gadgets that they have now that they can carry in their front pocket. So it was just a really interesting time, personality-wise. Obviously, music, culture. There were clashes both within the clubhouse and also in America. And I remember there being a lot of issues in Detroit in '72, just on and on. You can go on. I'm not smart enough to remember a bunch of them, but you did know that it was going on. But the clubhouse, the meshing, even though there were arguments and fights, there was also a lot of compatibility, too. Some of that anger might have been directed at Charlie Finley, because it was still a time where there wasn't free agency. They were still controlled by ownership and the Messersmith issue and the Catfish Hunter issue of not being tendered a contract on time. All those things hadn't happened yet, and the Kurt Flood situation, I don't believe, happened yet. So it was all to come, but it was building up.
Yeah, boy, Rick Williams with us, as you know, the son of Dick Williams and Norma, his wonderful mother. But talking a little bit about life in the 70s, hanging around the Oakland A's, a lot of turmoil on the streets in those days. You're right, Vietnam was winding down, Richard Nixon and Watergate was happening. And then Campy Campaneris threw the bat. And Laren Legros.
Sure did.
And boy, all hell broke loose in Detroit when you guys had to go to Detroit in the hotel and the Campy couldn't come out of the hotel. There were people outside the hotel. And again, this reflected what was going on in the world in those days.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that other than I think everybody was open-jawed at what happened. And Billy Martin was the manager of the Tigers, I believe. And so they took on his personality, which it piqued the interest of that series. It was a confrontational series. Both teams were good. There were so many personalities involved, and at that time they weren't all the major star players, but they were still there were so many of the guys who had talent and who had charisma and who had power within the game and the playing of the game. Reggie Jackson was just starting. There were solid pros like Sal Bando and Dick Green, and as I mentioned, Dave Duncan, and then you've got all the guys over on the Detroit side too, and the issues that they had socially as well. You know, the people of Detroit and the to put it bluntly, the black-white issues, and those were all over the United States. So my mom, when she went to the playoff games in Detroit, she had Andre the Giant, the deceased wrestler, sitting next to her to protect her.
Really?
It was just, it's not stuff you can make up.
That's a good one. Rick Williams with us, who's now a scout with the Braves and doing a great job and knows so much about the game of baseball. I'm going to go back to 67 for a second. You're about 10 years old, and it's the impossible dream. You're at the ballpark in Fenway Park just about every day. Now, you're only a kid seeing the excitement, but what was Boston like in those days?
Well, it wasn't a sellout on the opening day, and it was really cold. And actually, my future college coach was Dad's first opposing manager, Eddie Stanky.
Okay.
But it was apathetic at the time. They didn't draw for a while until probably school let out, and they hovered around 500, maybe a little better, which was thought to be pretty good. But it was a four-team race, and things just happened the way they do in baseball. It just occurred, and the buildup was tremendous. And Boston had a six-game road trip, I believe, to might have been Baltimore and Cleveland and won all six games, and I happened to be on the trip and come back, and there's 10,000 people at Logan Airport, and this was just unheard of in Boston because they hadn't won since the 40s. And that momentum and the fans that carried that ball club, and Yastrzemski had his tremendous triple crown year, and there was misfortune when Conigliaro was hit in the eye by Jack Hamilton, and he was out the rest of the year. But then they acquired Hawk Harrelson, who was a personality among, you know, beyond anybody else. So it was just a phenomenal transition from one step to the next, and it built up, and things happened to work out, and they got to the World Series.
And what a World Series it was against the Cardinals. When you say Hawk Harrelson, first of all, Charlie Finley released him, which is another crazy story how that went down. But I remember him wearing the Nehru jacket. I'll always remember that, and the bell-bottom pants, and that's what people wore in those days. Again, baseball reflecting what was going on in society in those days. But ask about your dad. What kind of a manager was he? Now, of course, we've talked to countless people over the years that describe the kind of manager he was, but he's a Hall of Famer, and now when they look back on him with reverence at the kind of man he was and the kind of manager he was.
Well, there were people who did not like to play for him, and he could not manage, if he were alive today, he could not manage a single day in this time frame of baseball that we're in right now. And understandably so. The game changes, it evolves, and it leaves behind the people who preferred it their way, and that's fine. He was a brilliant baseball man, and that's just not my opinion, but I've had other people tell me the same thing. People who did not like to play for him have come up and said that it was the best thing that happened in retrospect. He was cutting edge even in 65 and 66 at Toronto, because I know he had positional charts and colored charts and all these things that he did in the hotel room with papers all spread out. And I was his gopher for looking things up in the book at the age of 9 and 8. And it was, I learned how to chart games then. So he was far ahead of, and certainly what it is right now, the analytics, what has now become the computer data, and that was all, those were all ideas that he thought of. There were, I'm sure he got them from other people. He grew up in the Branch Rickey, Paul Richards era, and those were tremendous baseball people, obviously, with a background and knowledge, and he was not one to be shy about stealing people's ideas and using them for himself, just like the good ones are nowadays.
Boy, all right. Pleasure having you on. I love this discussion because what got us on this is I feel that baseball mirrors the culture of America, and you did it. You connected us to the freedom of the 60s as you saw the players and how they treated you, the free thoughts that we had in the 60s, and then, of course, the turmoil of the 70s and the things that happened in Detroit and with Campy Campanaris and just what was going on in the world with the military, 2 weeks of military, which I did as well. So I think you did well. I think you connected baseball to America, and that's why I look forward to having you on. Very good. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Marty, for having me. It's always great to see you.
Yeah, very good. That's Rick Williams. Boy, nice to have him on. More coming up. KNBR 680, the sports leader.